Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed. No, it hasn't.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to yet another episode of the Every Outfit Podcast. Will we stop? No, never. We must talk about pop culture.
We'll stop when Project 2025 is in full effect.
Oh no. That's when we persist.
Nevertheless, she kept podcasting.
How are you, Chelsea? I've not really seen you as much as I usually do.
I'm fine. I'm happy. I'm glad that Tat's home and not traveling. I recently was told about the term Hollywood widow.
Oh.
Have you heard about this?
I can assume what it is, but please tell me.
Well, because so many people in LA work in the entertainment industry and have to go to Atlanta for 3 months to shoot a movie or Budapest or whatever, the spouse that is left behind is the Hollywood widow. And I've spent a lot of this summer being a Hollywood widow.
Wow. But you make it look so glamorous, Chelsea.
Thanks. So I'm happy that my partner is home right now. It's been really nice.
That's wonderful. She's actually sunning herself as we record right now.
Yeah, out by your pool. How are you?
I'm good. I have to say I had a very Chelsea Fairless weekend, or a very Chelsea Fairless Saturday afternoon, because I got my mom for Mother's Day this potpourri from Santa Maria Novella. Which, shout out to our friend Maya Bookbinder, who turned me on to this place. It is on Melrose Place, but it is a Florence monastery that makes just fabulous perfumes and soaps and potpourri. And so I had gotten that for my mom.
Wait, didn't we talk about potpourri recently?
We did.
Like, how did that come up?
I don't remember, but I do remember saying, and I still feel strongly about this, the one millennial rebrand of an old-timey product from our childhood that hasn't been touched is potpourri, and I think we are the ones to reinvent potpourri.
Okay, but we don't touch that shit with a 10-foot pole because it gets so dusty.
Sure, but didn't you feel that way about tin fish? And then Fishwife comes out with a Fly by June Szechuan smoked salmon, and you're like, oh, tin fish is amazing.
Remember when you were making fun of those candles that look like tin fish? Tat literally bought like a bunch of them. Like, I came home to all of these tin fish candles. It is millennial kryptonite. We can't stay away.
And I know that she doesn't listen to our podcast, so she just did that in parallel to us talking about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to get yelled at it by Tat. She does listen to our pod.
I mean, barely. So, okay. But your mom is into potpourri, so you got her potpourri.
I got her potpourri for her birthday. Then for Mother's Day, I doubled down and got a bunch more stuff from Santa Maria Novella. And she was like, I want to get the perfume version of potpourri. Because potpourri is not only just an object at Santa Maria Novella, it is also a scent. So I brought her down there. She got her potpourri scent. I got a scent myself, the Cali Rosa. Do you want to smell it?
Oh, that's nice.
Thank you. And I said, since we're on Melrose Place, do you mind if we stop by Margiela? And she was like, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, she supports the tabby. She appreciates the one that I got. She thinks that your tabby boots look fabulous, but not her taste.
Of course.
So I'm trying on a tabby Mary Jane, and she sees these tabby ballet flats with a little heel, and she goes, those look really comfortable and cute. I said, do you want to try on a pair? Chelsea, we have tabby-pilled Kathy.
That's so crazy.
She got her first pair of tabbies.
See, that makes sense, though, because I assume you're talking about the ballet flat that has like a 1-inch heel.
Yes.
Maybe 1.5 tops. That's perfect for her.
She put it on her foot and she goes, oh, it doesn't look so weird. And I was like, exactly.
Well, she's like not about to wear it with some like Eckhaus Lotta halter top, you know?
Look, we still got a few more months in the year.
I'm now imagining your mom with a full Essence makeover.
Well, I said to her, I was like, I would love for you to dress more eccentric as you get older. And she's like, I think I want to do that. And I was like, yes.
She has all of the classic pieces, right? She has the nice trousers and cashmere turtlenecks and that sort of stuff. What she could do is get some quirkier accessories. She could get some weird coat from Prada or something.
Ooh, I love those.
Things that like really fit in with her existing clothes.
My ideal for my mother, and I think I brainwashed her into doing this, is just looking like a retired gallerist who had a gallery in Soho in the 70s.
Okay, then she's going to need to buy some weirder glasses and jewelry, because that's what that's all about.
Anyway, after that, she was like, she's still my mom. She was like, I have to return these Lululemon pants, which there is a Lululemon on Melrose, which is so bizarre. But there it is. And across the way from that was Glossier. And she's like, can we go into the Glossier? And I really had a Freaky Friday moment where I was like, okay, I think Chelsea somehow got transported into my mother's body.
I'm rubbing off on her. Who knew?
I'm glad I went with my mother to Glossier, because I feel like if she had gone by herself, she would have been a little overwhelmed.
Cause... Well, because she would be like, where the fuck do I check out?
Exactly.
Look, I love the Glossier store. I enjoy shopping there. But something is lost.
Of not having a checkout.
Yes. It's a missed opportunity design-wise, because it could be a really major part of the store. I don't know. It takes something away from the retail experience, I think. Although I understand why every millennial startup wants to be like Apple. Like, that's what everyone's trying to do. So it shows itself in weird ways, like having no register and just a bunch of people in pink jumpsuits with iPads, you know?
Well, also, I think it breaks the boomer's mind that you then have to sit, basically be an Uber Eats delivery person for your own order. You're just like sitting there waiting for your name to be called.
Yeah.
Also, Kathy's other comment about the new Glossier store, the newish Glossier store, she goes, all hard surfaces.
That's true. The flowers are the only thing in there that are giving a bit of like textural contrast. It is all quite cold and unfeeling.
And if any place could support a shag rug, that's one of them.
But did you go to the real store across the street?
No, but I did explain to her that this is the physical location of the real, which she thought was a stroke of genius. She was like, maybe people don't trust the real, and then they see and they go, oh, these items are indeed real.
Yeah, I have to go in there this week, return some shit. You can also buy stuff online and return it there.
Ooh, that's very convenient.
Shall we move on?
Yes, I think a question for our time. Is Chapel Roan okay?
Yeah, Chapel Roan doesn't seem to like being famous. She posted a video on TikTok followed by a very lengthy Instagram post. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it is very, very long. So let's just play a clip of her video.
I don't want whatever the fuck you think you're supposed to be entitled to whenever you see a celebrity. I don't give a fuck if you think it's selfish of me to say no for a photo or for your time or for a hug. That's not normal. That's weird. It's weird how people think that you know a person just because you see them online or you listen to the art they make. That's fucking weird. I'm allowed to say no to creepy behavior.
Chelsea, stop being so fucking weird, okay?
The response to all of this has been mixed. I feel like people are either, yes, queen, assert your boundaries, or like, God, she's fucking annoying. And I relate to both of these perspectives.
Same, because I think with modern fan culture and certainly this element of having parasocial relationships with people, I think the people that are insulted by this are, and we all do this, we have a tendency to individualize things. And I feel like a lot of her fans that have hurt feelings over this feel like she's talking directly to them, like, you violated my boundaries. And clearly she is talking about a segment of weird shit people. So I understand who she's speaking about, and I don't think it's a wide swath of her fan base, a clarification she maybe could have made. She's right in defining the fact that she doesn't have to perform for people when she is not on stage. She's also made it clear that Chapel Roan is a project and she is a persona. And I feel like for that reason, she should not have broken character.
Absolutely. She is correct in that celebrities are dehumanized and it is not okay to stalk them or impose yourself physically on them or demand their time. But to suggest that asking someone for a photo is weird is insane.
Yeah, I've always found the line, I don't owe you, the fan, anything. It's always been a fraught phrase for me because at once I get it. It's, you know, I don't need to entertain you when I'm not performing, I'm not on stage. But also, you are able to do what you do because of the fans.
Yeah, of course. You can't really be off the clock when you're famous because that's literally what fame is.
She has found herself in a very specific form of fame, which is a meteoric rise of a pop star kind of fame.
Yeah, and there's no way to be an unfamous pop singer. Sia kind of tried by obscuring her face and her performances. I suppose Daft Punk succeeded in that regard. But unless you're going to wear a mask for the rest of your life, this is going to happen to you. There is another out, however. You could do the Fiona Apple, Kate Bush thing where you just kind of retreat somewhere and live a normal life and occasionally release an album or occasionally perform. But you're not really in the public. But if she's going to do that, she has to get off TikTok.
You can't have it both ways. I was going to suggest, I do feel like there is a middle ground. I think she cannot exist in the way she previously existed without a compromise. And it's not being Chapel Roan. But she might need to make adjustments in her life offstage as Kaylee, which is wearing a black wig. Chapel Roan is such a specific look that if she just wore a wig and glasses, most people probably wouldn't recognize her. I mean, I do agree with her. It is weird shit for people to call her by her real name. It is an interesting thing where, unlike Lady Gaga, I doubt many people call Lady Gaga, many of her fans call her Stephanie. Like, she is distinctly Lady Gaga.
Another thing I found to be a little weird was the fact that in her Instagram post specifically, she framed this as a women's issue. She's writing, women don't owe you shit. Women don't owe you a reason why they don't want to be touched or talked to. And I get that she's speaking about something more broad in our culture, but also it's like what she's really talking about isn't gendered because it's about fame, and fame isn't exclusive to women. Like, look at Justin Bieber. He probably has it the worst.
I remember a few years ago listening to an interview with Paul McCartney where he says that, I think someone asked him, like, how do you deal with, you know, now with cell phones, everyone wants a photo with you. Everyone can take a photo with you when they run into you. And he goes, I don't do selfies. If I meet someone and they say, hey, can I take a photo of you? He goes, I won't take photos, but I'll stand here and have a conversation with you. And it is funny, I've heard other celebrities try to employ that and how it, like, doesn't register with some people of, like, but if I can't document that I met you, what is it worth? Like, in a weird way, fans almost decline having a conversation with their favorite celebrity because they want that souvenir, essentially.
Totally. And no one has any communication skills anymore, just generally speaking.
Sorry to generalize, but I imagine that her fan base, the Gen Z, Gen Alpha, who spent most of their adolescent and teenage years in the pandemic in their homes, certainly don't have the social skills. Like, that already was breaking down pre-pandemic, but I can only imagine how unhinged fan culture is now. She needs to be like Anne Hathaway. Have you seen those recent videos of her where Anne Hathaway gets out of a car on the way during, like, press tours or a hotel she's staying at, and she puts her hands up and she's like, hey, 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 hey. And she gets, like, very quiet so everyone has to listen. She goes, I will take photos with everyone, but stop. I will take photos with everyone, but I'm going to go one by one. It's a little cult leader-ish, but it certainly resets the tone.
See, I think she needs to do what Jackie O did. When people asked her for a photo, like when she was living in New York in the 70s, she just said, "I'm sure you'll understand," and walked away.
So good.
And people were like, "Do I understand? Maybe I do." It's, to me, that's such a genius way of getting out of it. But I think this whole Chapel Roan thing speaks to the fact that people naturally assume that people that are performers, like a Chapel Roan, are extroverts. And a lot of celebrities actually aren't extroverts, which is why they take to fame badly. Like, fame is bad for someone like Heath Ledger, but good for someone like Kim Kardashian. It really is a personality type thing. And she clearly does not have the personality type of someone that takes well to being famous.
For sure. And I also think we are witnessing in real time, certainly a breaking of the fourth wall, but there's a reason why people at this fame level have security. You need someone to be the asshole for you. I think another issue is she's the one making this declaration. It's not a publicist being like, "Chapel's not going to take any photos right now."
It is interesting, though, because normally when someone gets instantly famous, as Chapel Roan has, the person at least appears to be happy.
Right.
The fact that she is letting us in on the fact that she is clearly not okay with this and not thrilled with what fame has brought to her life is just very different than anything we've seen before from a pop star. But I think that speaks to the fact that now so many people are comfortable with sharing their most intimate emotions in public.
And it works both ways, because another thing that she kept talking about was like, "Don't touch me. Stop touching me." So it works both ways of like, we know way too much about Chapel Roan, but also, I can't believe this needs to be said, don't touch people you don't know.
In some exciting news, Stacey London and Clinton Kelly, the former hosts of What Not to Wear, are reuniting for a new Amazon series called Wear Whatever the F You Want. The gods have answered our prayers, Lauren.
Yes, but unfortunately, woke culture has gotten to them.
I know. They said in a statement, "The world has changed a lot since the run of What Not to Wear, and thankfully so have we. These days, we have zero interest in telling people what to do based on society's norms because there are no more norms. However, style is still an important form of communication, and we're excited to show new clients how to align their personal messaging with their life goals. It's time to celebrate individual style, not prescribe it."
And Amazon Prime said that the official description of the show will be, "Over the course of a couple days, London and Kelly will empower each client to live out their fashion fantasy and find their style truth in the journey of a lifetime."
The statement that they released is basically them acknowledging that being the fashion police is now considered problematic. But I don't think they ever stifled people's individuality on What Not to Wear. They just encouraged them to think about, like, proportion and fit. And I felt bad for them. Like, some of the people, because you have to be nominated by others to be on What Not to Wear, right? Some of the people that they got, like, didn't want to change at all, were so mean to them. They were just trying to help. I felt bad for them in a lot of episodes.
Right. The problem was not the host. The problem was the contestants.
Because What Not to Wear, like, it's not like they force you to wear all these clothes like they do on Queer Eye. It's like they tell you what you should buy and then you have to go shopping by yourself.
Look, don't get me wrong. I'm excited to see them back on my television screen, but I do worry that this is the new queer eyeification of this show, where it has to be about meaning and message and personal journey, where it's like, I'm sorry, sometimes people should be told what they shouldn't be wearing.
Yeah, seriously, like, there's nothing wrong with that, but I am truly so excited. I was the hugest What Not to Wear fan. Seeing Stacey and Clinton be back together is like a dream for me. Also, they're both gay now. Because before it was just Clinton.
I just had an idea. Should we be contestants on the show?
Honestly, I would love to. Amazon has greenlit this for 8 episodes, which makes me think that they don't know if it will be successful or not, which means that everyone listening has to watch this show. We have to support the OGs.
Didn't we have an idea once about a show that just needed to be called Don't Dress Like Shit?
Yes. We can pitch that show. In a bit of sad fashion news, we lost an icon this week. We lost Betty Halbreich, the legendary personal shopper at Bergdorf Goodman. She was hired there as a sales associate in the mid-70s and worked there up until this past May. She was 96 years old when she passed away.
I feel very embarrassed I did not know who this woman was. However, I in a way did, because I have seen her memoir, I'll Drink to That, in bookstores for a decade and have been like, I'll probably like that book, and have never read it. I now just ordered it.
Well, she's a very niche New York fashion celebrity, so I'm not surprised that a lot of people don't know about her. A lot of people didn't know about her until the documentary Scatter My Ashes at Bergdorf's came out, like a decade ago, or maybe over a decade ago now. And she's the one that really popped, because her whole thing was like, she tells it like it is. Like, she tells you that you look like shit to your face.
And then tells you how to fix it.
Yeah. Like, she won't let you buy certain things. She had a very dry sense of humor. She didn't work on commission at Bergdorf's. She was on salary. So she wasn't trying to upsell people crazy shit.
Right.
And yeah, it's pretty crazy. She basically had her own personal shopping business within Bergdorf's called Betty Helbreich Solutions. You know, she had a lot of clients that were wealthy women, socialites, obviously, celebrities like Candace Bergen,
Lauren Bacall.
Yeah.
The late, great Betty Ford.
But she did a lot of work with costume designers, and specifically a lot of work on Sex and the City, and from the beginning of the show. So basically what would happen is that Betty would pull for each character, and then Pat Field would come in and look at everything. And then they would pull like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of clothes.
That now all sit in Sarah Jessica Parker's archive.
Exactly.
RIP to a legend. I look forward to her inevitable Ryan Murphy Prestige Limited series.
Yes, we can only hope. Also, if you want to know more about Betty, Judith Thurman did an amazing profile of her for The New Yorker. And Celebrity Book Club did an episode about her memoir, which was really fun. So I will link to all of those things in the show notes.
What else? You and I saw a film this past week, not together, but we saw Zoe Kravitz's directorial debut, Blink Twice.
Okay, what did you think?
I enjoyed it more than I thought I was going to enjoy it.
Okay, that doesn't seem like a rave. I love Zoe Kravitz, but this movie didn't hold my attention personally. I definitely didn't need to see it in a theater.
Interesting. I went in and I tempered my expectations because you had texted me and said you did not love this film. So I think I enjoyed the film more than you did, but like any psychological thriller, you tend to leave the theater, then you're like, wait, hold on, that doesn't make sense. Wait, if that happened, what?
Yeah, that was me the second I stepped out.
So for those who don't know what this film is about, the logline from IMDb says, when tech billionaire Slater King meets cocktail waitress Frida at his fundraising gala, he invites her to join him and his friends on a dream vacation on his private island. As strange things start to happen, Frida questions her reality.
Clearly loosely based on Epstein's island.
Right. This film was originally going to be called Pussy Island.
I don't think that's a good title for the movie because of how graphic the rape scene is. Like, it's actually quite disturbing, and I was a little shocked by it.
At the beginning of this film, there is a title card that is a trigger warning. I knew about this going in, and I remember thinking, do we really need that? This is a little performative, isn't it? No, no, no. It has, you are correct, one of the most disturbing sexual assault scenes. And as someone who has seen a lot of those things, we've talked about the film Irreversible, I found that unnecessary and triggering for me, who doesn't have any history with that kind of trauma.
Yeah, we also don't expect something that gratuitous in a movie like this.
And also, what we just said might be deemed as a spoiler, but honestly, I think it needs to be known going into the film. I have seen people shocked that is what the film is about. I went in understanding that if pretty girls are going to an island where they are secluded with a billionaire of some kind, I think bad shit is going to happen.
But it's more shocking because we don't really see cinematic depictions of rape like this anymore, because they have been deemed to be too disturbing, too eroticized, too male-gazy, too gratuitous. And I think that's been a positive change in film, personally.
And it is hinted at through audio and sort of pun intended, blink and you miss it flashes earlier in the film that I found way more effective.
Yeah. And that also speaks to the reality of PTSD and makes sense conceptually. But mostly I found it to be boring, the movie. Like, it wasn't really like you expect that a mystery is going to unravel, but like nothing really happens.
It does suffer from the don't worry, darling issue where the reveal of what is happening is revealed a little too late.
But we know something is wrong almost immediately.
Yeah, I think that modern film audiences, this is just my philosophy, that modern film audiences have gotten much smarter, can see what the twist is, know that Channing Tatum is the villain of this film. And so I feel like those things need to be revealed halfway through the movie, because them getting out, getting off the island is much more interesting. And it's sort of, it's confined to the last 15 minutes of the film. I should say the casting of this movie is incredible.
Yeah, the acting is great.
Channing Tatum as Slater King playing against type. Zoe Kravitz, who is now engaged to Channing Tatum, cast him before she had actually never met him, but wanted to weaponize the charm that you've seen him in movies. And he does that brilliantly. I hope he plays more villain roles. But just the surprise of seeing Kyle MacLachlan.
Oh my God. But he's amazing. He does not have much screen time in this film, but he does so much with it.
And then Gina Davis, who I was unaware was in this movie at all.
As the Ghislaine Maxwell of the situation. That was a plot twist.
Yes, I guess we are spoiling this film a little bit.
Is that a spoiler, or did you not assume that she was fulfilling that role the second you saw her?
Oh, yeah.
So it's not a spoiler.
I will say, I think people should go and see this film just for the fact that, like, if people don't see films like this, we're going to keep getting twisters or sequels, reboots.
No, don't see this movie. Come on. There's so many better movies to see.
Such as?
Well, definitely not Twisters. I saw that and that was fucked.
What didn't you like about it?
It kind of went all downhill from the first Twister, like where everyone dies in the first scene.
Spoiler. Yeah. Although you can't have a Twister film if the main female character isn't traumatized by people she loves dying in a Twister.
I don't know. I just think that this movie is not a see in a theater movie. It's a watch it on Hulu movie. Anywho, shall we move on?
Yeah, there's no more pop culture news for the week, so let's answer some voicemails.
Hi. Okay, long time listener, first time caller, but I really have an important question to ask. So I was at your tour in New York City, and I really liked the segment on glamorous women having nervous breakdowns. And my boyfriend and I watched The Piano Teacher last night, which I was really hyping up to him because I was like, the girls on my favorite podcast love it. We watched it, and we were like, what the actual fuck is this? It was like one of the most disturbing. I just did not get it. So I was wondering, I don't think you've ever like really gone into depth and explained like where your love for this film comes from, but I need you to explain it to me because you could not pay me to watch that movie again. Okay, love you guys.
I fucking hate this movie you love, but love you. Bye.
Well, to be fair, we didn't say that it was a great date night movie.
I'm obsessed with this call and this caller. I edited the voicemail down a little bit, but she did say that she and her boyfriend are in their 20s, and I love to think that her boyfriend is watching his favorite Twitch stream on a Friday night, and she's like, babe, we gotta watch this Michael Haneke film, okay?
We like it because it's the most fucked up movie. Isabelle Huppert's performance in this film is in a league of its own. I don't think any other actress is willing to be so depraved and so unglamorous in a role. And the thing about The Piano Teacher is that she plays a complete pervert, which in most movies would have an erotic quality to it, especially with a very attractive actress like Isabelle Huppert. But there's nothing erotic about this film. In fact, it's grotesque. And that's what makes it so special.
For those who have not seen our live show, we do a bit about glamorous women having nervous breakdowns. We compare and contrast five different women to crown who's the craziest bitch of them all. So I just love that she also saw that and was like, this is a great date movie. I assume you started with The Piano Teacher, which I just feel like is expert level. Like, I don't know if I would even watch The Piano Teacher with Paul.
I've seen The Piano Teacher like 3 times. I love it. It's so fucked up. But also, Michael Haneke, I love. It's like you're either into it or you're not.
Yes. And dear God, don't watch any more Michael Haneke films.
Yeah. Avoid at all costs.
But I do love the transitive property of likes, where this caller's like, well, I like Lauren and Chelsea, and they like this movie. Therefore, I will also like this movie. It's okay to like our podcast and not like the pop culture things we like. It's completely valid.
Of course, but I have some other recommendations for them. Antichrist.
No.
Irreversible.
No.
Sallow, for sure. See, to me, watching these movies builds character in a weird way.
This is reminding me of a time when you recommended one of your friends to watch Todd Solondz's Happiness.
To be fair, that was on me. Because while I think that that is a very, very good movie, it is triggering. And that's completely understandable. If you want The Piano Teacher but funny, watch Happiness.
Also, slide into our DM so we can Venmo you what it costs to rent The Piano Teacher.
Yeah, seriously. I'd love to reimburse.
Hey, Lauren and Chelsea, calling for the second time tonight. Something just occurred to me while I was scrolling through movie options on Tubi. Have you guys ever seen, I feel like you must have, and I'm surprised you don't talk about it more, the movie The Crush, Alicia Silverstone's breakthrough role where it's like Fatal Attraction meets Lolita? It's honestly like one of my favorite awful movies to rewatch. It's so inspiring and amazing and just a camp classic. And I would love to hear you guys touch on it. All right. Love you. Bye.
Of course we've seen The Crush. Have you not seen The Crush?
Oh my God. Of course. It's okay. One of my favorite films.
You scared me there for a second. It's the best movie. I saw it when I was really young, like probably rented it on VHS, but I did rewatch it like maybe 10 years ago, and it really, really holds up.
And you are correct, dear caller. I'm not sure why we don't talk about The Crush more either.
We should talk about it all the time, because The Crush is a very important part of one of my favorite film subgenres, which is 90s jailbait thrillers.
Of which there's not enough. It's this, it's Poison Ivy.
There's a lot. Poison Ivy, a lot of Reese Witherspoon films, right? Fear, Freeway. There was more highbrow jailbait movies in the 90s, like Stealing Beauty with Liv Tyler. Yeah. Not a thriller, no. But...
That's a Bertolucci film. That's very classy jailbait.
Classy jailbait. We got the Lolita remake with Dominique Swain.
We got all of those Long Island Lolita TV movies.
And in The Crush, Alicia Silverstone is in her peak jailbait Aerosmith era.
For those who are uninitiated with this film, Cary Elwes plays a journalist who moved to Los Angeles. He moves into the guest house of a family home. They have a 14-year-old daughter played by Alicia Silverstone who becomes obsessed with Cary Elwes and sexually harasses him. Sort of the reverse of what you would be expecting from a story like this.
It's a different take on Lolita because he's not into her. Like, he's not trying to fuck, but she's basically sexually harassing him.
Yes, and his appropriate rejection of this girl makes her crazy. The caller does peg it correctly. I believe he called it Fatal Attraction meets Lolita, and it absolutely is this. But I love this film so much that I know this bit of trivia that I don't know if you do. The film was written and directed by a guy named Alan Shapiro, and it's based on something that happened to him.
Oh yeah, you did tell me that once.
But the problem was that he so based this on what happened in his life that he didn't even change the name of the girl. So the original cut of the film, her name is Darian. The family sued him, and so they had to dub her name to Adrian. You can sometimes see lip saying Darian, but the name Adrian coming out. Wow. I don't have Tubi, and I really should. I recently learned that two of my dad's films are currently on Tubi, Chell.
Oh, great. Which ones?
Stranger by Night and Object of Obsession.
Great titles.
Which we have been discussing wanting to do one of my dad's movies for a VIP episode, but the barrier to entry was like no one else could watch them because previous to them being on Tubi, they just live in DVDs in my house. When Carnal Crimes is available, like that's the one, that's the entry point. Chell, that's the one that has an erotic photo shoot scene with a banana. Just think about that.
I can't wait. Next call.
Hello, Slut. My name is Andy. I'm a fuckhead, and really, really considering making a move from Texas to California, specifically the LA region. While I've been to LA, I don't exactly know the inside scoop about where to look and where to live and what areas would be best for me. I am an artist. I love nature. I know that LA is big and that there's some walkability in certain neighborhoods, but that there's also a lot of driving, which I'm used to. And I just want y'all's point of view on what parts of LA speak to you.
There's a few things going on in this call because at one, she's recommending neighborhoods that would work for her as an artist who also loves nature. But then she's also asking us to talk about neighborhoods we love, which there are overlaps, but there are some different recommendations. Like where you and I live, which we very much enjoy, would not be my recommendation for her.
Like if you're an artist, you should probably live in Echo Park or Eagle Rock. Resist the arts district. You care about nature, you don't want to be there.
We'll start there. We'll start with where you shouldn't move, and that is downtown Los Angeles.
I'm sorry to any fuckettes that live there. And look, I get it. In downtown Los Angeles, you can live the penthouse dream of being in some like crazy service building with panoramic views and like new renovations, yada, 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 potentially close to your work. But I think for the average person, certainly for an artist, no.
For time, I edited this call down a little bit. The caller does say she is applying to jobs and doesn't know where she'll land, which is an important factor.
Very important factor.
But for those who are unfamiliar with LA, I would suggest these three neighborhoods that I feel like are representative of the Los Angeles living experience. So I would start with Los Feliz, just because, yes, your inclination, if you're an artist, is to live on the east side. Not as much nature, I would say, but for Los Feliz, I feel like that's a great introduction to Los Angeles. Depending on where you live, it's walkable. Vermont and Hillhurst, I feel like, are exactly what you think living in Los Angeles would be like.
I used to live in Los Feliz. It is a great neighborhood, although it's quite expensive.
You'll see cool East Side celebs. You're near Griffith Park.
And all of the hiking trails, which was one of my favorite parts about living in that neighborhood.
And again, if you're someone who fucks with West Hollywood but has friends that live in Glassell Park or Atwater, like, this is a great middle ground. Second neighborhood I would recommend, Studio City, Toluca Lake. I'm a big Valley girl, suburban. It's starting to get cool. A John and Vinny's is about to open up.
Great.
You have Fryman Canyon. It's walkable depending on where you live. And then, you know, you nor I are West Side people, but... again, I know this is an expensive neighborhood, but Venice?
I mean, I am a West Side person. I'm just not a Venice, Santa Monica kind of girl.
Valley, Beach, East Side. This is reflective of kind of the three main food groups of Los Angeles neighborhoods. And look, there are up-and-coming neighborhoods like Jefferson Park, West Adams, but those are not exactly close to nature.
No. Although I would say... keep your options open. We're now in a situation with real estate where it like actually can be cheaper to find a one bedroom in Beverly Hills than Silver Lake. So something to think about.
The East Side is having that same issue that like Williamsburg had at a certain point in the 2010s. Where...
yeah, it's cheaper to live on the Upper East Side than in Williamsburg now.
Right.
So if you want to live in a manicured neighborhood with minimal crime... that is an option.
And Beverly Hills is oddly walkable. Let us know where you land.
Hi, Lauren and Chelsea. This is Jordan from Denver. I'm calling because I have found myself knocked up, and I'm not really sure what my maternity style should be. I'm still a few months away from being big enough that I really need to think about it, maybe 1 or 2 months. And I'm just curious what celebrities or what styles have you seen out there in the world for pregnant women that you think work? Or what about looks that don't work? Because sometimes knowing what doesn't work is just as important as what does. I'd be interested to hear if you think of any designers do any great work that can be good on a belly. I'm thinking really age-inappropriate crop tops since it's going to be summer. I don't know. Thank you all. Love you. Bye.
You know what I love? A baggy pant worn under the bump. Like you could get that baggy jean that Gap is making now, the one in the Troye Sivan ads. And then you can wear that with like a button down with like the bottom few buttons unbuttoned to accommodate the bump. or like a stretchy Skims bodysuit. I think you should look at Skims and what their current maternity options are just to get some basics in the mix.
I think you can track the evolution of pregnancy style over the last decade through Kourtney Kardashian's pregnancies. Because I feel like about 15 years ago is when companies figured out how to make normal clothing, I'll put that in quotes, work for pregnancies, where they were like, girl, just because you've been knocked up doesn't mean you have to give up your Citizen of Humanity jeans. We've now just put a stretchy panel in where the waistband was. Like, girl, you can still wear your favorite shirts because we've added ruching. And now I feel like it's just about buying normal low-rise pants with a button-down shirt with the buttons open to show your belly. I think Rihanna ushered in the era of fuck maternity wear, bellies out.
Yeah, and that's super cool of her, obviously, but I do think it sets like a very unattainable and fucked up beauty standard for just the average person who maybe during pregnancy isn't feeling like the most comfortable with their body or the most like they want to wear a crop top and be sexy. If I was pregnant now, personally, I would hate the fact that it's like, fuck, now I'm not like Sienna Miller with my tummy out in a Schiaparelli outfit.
Right.
I feel like shit.
I would say I think shirt dresses are your friend. I was also thinking about Norma Kamali stuff, very bodycon, very stretchy. Their elephant pant has like a built-in maternity panel anyway, because it's that stretchy. Also, in Googling this, I discovered H&M has a line called Mama, which actually, don't hate on the name, it actually had stuff that I didn't hate.
I'll have to take your word on that because I'm not doing this Google right now. Also, invest in a great caftan. I started buying caftans because I like the look, of course, but also because my weight fluctuates and I hate buying new clothes. So caftans are perfect. You gotta like look on Etsy or eBay or go vintage. You know, there's of course nice ones made by contemporary designers, but they can be quite expensive if we're getting into the Taller Marmo Dries territory.
And I was thinking about my maternity inspirations, and I guess it's really just Mia Farrow and Rosemary's Baby. Like, I like to think my pregnancy style would just be voluminous Empire waisted mini dresses with Peter Pan collars.
But that would work for you because you are giving child.
I'm giving child bride, child pregnancy.
You have to give woman child to do that, or else it's like freaky.
So I'm too childish looking to wear a Peter Pan collar.
No, I'm saying you're childish looking enough to pull off a Peter Pan collar. Like, I'd look like Betty Davis in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane if I attempted a Peter Pan collar.
I don't know if you've seen these photos. Margot Robbie is now pregnant and she has been hanging out in Italy with a blazer and a crop top and belly out and a skirt underneath the bump. And I don't think I can pull off that look.
Well, we'll see what kind of pregnant person you are. You never know. You could have one of those really sexy Emrata pregnancies.
I somehow don't think that's me either. But, you know, we're excited for your journey. Please send us photos. You also left this message months ago, so.
Have you given birth? Probably. Congrats, girl.
Hey guys, this is Albert. I'm a longtime fuckette. I live in New York. First, I just want to say I'm sorry for kind of heckling you when you guys came to New York. I was just having so much fun, but I do feel bad about that. So sorry about that. Second, I had a question for Chelsea. I've been getting a lot more clips of like Oprah when I'm scrolling through TikTok. And I know like you are a longtime fan of the show. I was wondering, like, is that something you can just kind of like pick up and watch? Like, do you pick a season? Do you just watch like clips for like an intro, like Oprah show, like fan? What would you recommend for me to like listen to? All right. Thanks. Bye.
Okay. Firstly, I don't think digesting old episodes of Oprah through TikTok is a bad thing. I think every time you see one, you should like it and save it so the algorithm just keeps populating with more Oprah clips. That said, I do watch old clips on YouTube to get my fix.
Well, from my understanding, you can only watch the clips on YouTube or TikTok, right? Because even though Oprah has her own network, it's not like she's playing old episodes of the Oprah Winfrey Show, even though she owns her whole archive.
Weirdly, she's not, but if you go to the OWN YouTube channel, they are now uploading full episodes. Not every episode, but there are some full episodes, and they've uploaded 10,000 clips of crucial parts from different episodes. So I will put the link to that in the show notes. I would just peruse there. But I will say that the content is more leaning towards like human interest stories and less celebrity type stuff. I think if you're into pop culture, just Google any celebrity plus Oprah and watch whatever is on YouTube.
Right. Some stan has uploaded their old VHS recording.
Also, there is a Oprah Winfrey Show podcast that is basically just old episodes of Oprah edited as podcasts. So you could listen to that as well.
Oh, I bet you do.
I do. The Oprah video that I watch the most is an Oprah video called There Are No Mistakes. I will link to this as well. It's Oprah talking to, I think, a bunch of students at the Stanford Business School. And whenever I am feeling like frazzled or there's something in my life that I can't figure out, I literally watch this clip of Oprah and it helps me. And I've sent it to many friends who have been in periods of turmoil. So that's my number one Oprah video of all time.
All right, there you go.
Hey, girl. French Fuckette here, calling kind of drunk, but French drunk, so not really. I've been wondering, what do you guys think about Beatrice, D-A-L-L-E, in case you guys don't know her, but I feel like you do. I just want to know, like, what you think about her and what your favorite movie is of hers, if you've seen any. And if you haven't seen any, I strongly recommend Lux Eterna and also Trouble Every Day. Anyway, have a, like, great podcast, I guess. Bye.
Thank you for spelling out her name. And then the presumption that, you know what, you guys actually probably do know who Beatrice Dahl is. We do.
She's, yeah, no shit. She's major.
She's fab, although I don't know a ton about her, I realized.
I don't know a ton about her either. I have seen Trouble Every Day. I have seen Betty Blue and Inside, which is my personal favorite. I've been trying to get Lauren to watch this movie for years. I just want to put it out there after our piano teacher call. It is also very fucking disturbing. So if you don't want to watch the most fucked up movie ever, do not watch Inside. But based on the movies that I have seen that she's been in, like, is she only in fucked up movies? Because all of these movies are fucked up.
In perusing her Wikipedia, I learned that she married, in 2005, she married an inmate that she met while acting in a short film that was being shot in a prison.
Wow, Lana Del Rey wishes.
They were married for 10 years. They divorced in 2015. Beatrice Dahl first got on my radar because as a teenager, I was a huge fan of The Distillers, and I remember reading an article with Brody Dahl, and she said she chose her surname because of the actress Beatrice Dahl.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
So I was like, who is this person? And my favorite Beatrice Dahl film, you said, is Betty Blue. It's erotic, tragic. Beatrice Dahl plays the titular Betty, and she is giving Glamorous Woman having a nervous breakdown.
Yes, she is. I feel like we should also acknowledge her contributions to fashion. She's been a muse to a lot of designers. She modeled in one of those McQueen Givenchy shows. She modeled for Gautier. She also wore Alaya a lot. She was in that very famous photo that Jean Paul Goud took where Beatrice Dahl is in like a giant black voluminous dress and Azzedine Alaya is like in an Alaya box that she's carrying, and there's all these dogs running around.
Very glamorous.
The face is just crazy. Like, she's an amazing actress, obviously, but the look to me is just like the most major anyone's ever looked. It's like if you did a face morph of like Isabella Gianni and Sandra Bernhard, like in the middle would be this
shit.
Bitch.
You're, yeah. Wow, yeah. Also, I can't believe that until this call, I was unaware of this 2019 Gaspar Noé film, Lux Eterna. I looked it up and it says, this is the logline, like, it's giving Dogville, it seems. Actors Beatrice Dahl and Charlotte Gainsbourg are gradually pushed into the chaos of witchcraft after they decide to make a film about witches, plunging the two into a world of technical problems and psychotic outbreaks. So they're playing themselves? Thank you for that.
Hey, I love you guys. First-time caller, long-time listener. I recently found out that Dennis Rodman married himself in like 1996. And I just think he looked so fucking iconic. And he was also accompanied by a group of women in tuxedos. And there was a horse-drawn carriage. Yeah, I just think it's incredible, and I can't stop thinking about it, and I would love your takes on it.
What an incredible moment in pop culture. I'm so glad that this happened during my childhood.
Yeah, we should explain. There is context. He didn't do this for no reason. But I will say I do miss stunts like this.
He didn't do it to get revenge on his friend Tatum O'Neal, who didn't reimburse him for his lost Manolos.
No, he did this to promote his memoir in 1996, Bad As I Wanna Be. He was actually inspired by, of all people, Howard Stern, who had dressed up in drag the year before to promote his memoir. Dennis Rodman, of course, took that idea and made it 10 times more fabulous. I could not find a designer credit for the custom wedding gown,
but it looked major. It was like this halter neck, very chic, minimal 90s wedding gown. As I remember, Kevin Aucoin did his beat.
Yes, Kevin Aucoin did the makeup. And he married himself because he declared he was a bisexual and loved himself that much. And look, the stunt worked because his memoir, Bad As I Want to Be, which, Chelsea, I've never read, became a New York Times bestseller and was a bestseller for like 20 weeks.
I just think Dennis Rodman is so fucking cool. Like, he was genuinely subversive. He was wearing women's clothes, not just in this instance. At one point, he had an AIDS awareness ribbon like shaved in the back of his head. Like, no one was doing that kind of shit at the time. And he doesn't really get the credit. Like, I'm sure he's on the mood boards for, like, lots of fashion designers that we like now. But at the time, he really was a trailblazer in so many ways.
I remember how freaked out people were by this stunt. And I don't understand why.
Gender panic. And he really, like, had no shame about it, which was so cool. And I really like how people tried to sort of characterize him, his gender, his sexuality, and he kind of resisted it. But he's always been a friend to the gay community. I remember seeing him at the Abbey kind of recently, or not recently, but like 5 years ago.
Damn. The detail I didn't remember was the seven groomswomen in the tuxes.
Yeah, I forgot about that as well, but excellent touch.
More people need to do stunts like this.
Yeah, I agree. Also, the VMAs are coming up soon. And for some reason, that VMAs look that he did where he's just wearing like a sparkly spaghetti strap tank top, right, like something that looks like it could come from Wet Seal or something, with this like baggy deconstructed jean. Like, I feel like everyone is trying to look like that now, men and women.
And I think that was partially our maternity style recommendation.
Yeah, actually, that is exactly it.
Hi, Lauren and Chelsea. This is Catherine from San Diego. I just heard Chelsea say that she was doing a rewatch of the series the other day, so I'm doing that as well. Love this journey for us. And I also wanted to give you a special shout out because I had ordered a J'adore Dykes t-shirt from you, and you overnighted it to me so I could wear it to Pride, and it fucking killed. Oh my God, I went to an all-lesbian pool party. The white tee was the perfect sheerness over my bikini. And I got a date from that pool party, and I've been seeing her for the last month. So you've been helping me, a fellow fuckette and dyke, who j'adore, I truly j'adore dykes, and you've been helping me get laid. So I just wanted to let you know that beautiful story found a lovely ending. And thank you so much. Love the merch, love the podcast, love you ladies. Hope you're having a great August. Bye.
Wait, you overnighted the shirt? Because we don't offer express shipping, do we? No.
No, we don't. But in the run-up to the wedding, the fulfillment center had to shut down for a little bit. And so this lovely fuckhead did email and was like, hey, where's my, is my shirt going to be here? Like, no pressure. It's just, I'm going to a Pride event this weekend. It was like a Thursday. And she lived in San Diego. And I was like, you know what? That was our fuck up. We're going to overnight it to you. And look, look what it brought this fuckette.
I love this so much. And furthermore, if anyone has gotten laid as a result of wearing our merch, I would love to hear about it.
Especially straight women. Love to know if that has happened.
I don't think that'll ever happen.
Hi, Chelsea and Lauren. I'm a huge fan, and I basically watch everything you talk about and read everything you mention on the podcast, so I'm basically completely cucked for this podcast. And I'm calling because I am basically in a long game trying to indoctrinate my boyfriend into my feminist ways. He's not like a total misogynist. He's not even like a sexist person. He's just far from, we'll say, being anything like a loop. So he has agreed to watch feminist movies, maybe like 2 a month or something. So I'm here to ask you, what feminist movies should I make my boyfriend watch? Either from the canon or just totally out there, random, anything made by women or about women. Love the pod. Love you guys. Bye.
My first instinct was, don't make this bro watch these movies.
Well, I was gonna say, I hate to begin by saying your boyfriend is giving red flag, but it does make me nervous that you had to qualify him not wanting to watch quote-unquote feminist films, which honestly could mean chick flicks. I don't understand. By saying he's not misogynist or sexist, I would have thought that anyway.
Well, if he's not misogynist or sexist, then he's cool.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't need to immerse himself in the cinema of Chantal Ackerman to not be an asshole.
Chantal Ackerman, good feminist filmmaking, but from how you've described your boyfriend, like, Jean Dielman expert level. Like, what kind of feminist film are we talking about here? Are you trying to get your boyfriend to think female directors are cool? Then I would suggest showing him Point Break by Kathryn Bigelow.
Because I think it's about an action movie. Show him Thelma and Louise. Show him Set It Off. We did a VIP episode where we talked about both Thelma and Louise and Set It Off. And those are great movies because there are explosions, which your boyfriend will probably like. But there are also strong female characters who are fighting back against the sexist and racist and classist culture that seeks to oppress them. So that would be my rec.
I edited the part out where she said that he had traditionally masculine influences, so perhaps he'd like a movie from the crime genre. So my suggestion would be showing him Bound, written and directed by the Wachowskis, a great lesbian gangster film with a happy ending, and you can tell him it's the same writer-directors of The Matrix.
Okay, I see what you're doing there, although I don't think he will be into the, like, film noir dialogue, which is very, like, period-specific. Like, you'd almost, like, have to watch, like, the movies from the 30s and the 40s to, like, understand what they're doing in Bound.
Look, I could say Portrait of a Lady on Fire or Vagabond by Agnes Varda, but, like, from the way that this fuckhead has described her boyfriend, he's not there yet.
Also, he doesn't have to be there. Like, let him be a man. This is why men are, like, having, like, a mental health crisis, because everyone's trying to force them to watch obscure feminist movies. You know what he should watch? Mad Max. Like, what Mad Max was that?
Fury Road.
That Mad Max.
Yeah, I had that on my list as well.
Yeah, make him watch that. That's great. This shouldn't be, like, punishment.
Yeah, I think making it seem like homework is going to be bad. That's why we've given you films that will brainwash him into liking female-centric films.
Like, if you show him a film that is boring, he's not going to absorb any of the broader messaging.
Anyway, best of luck to you. Let us know how it goes.
Hi, Lauren and Chelsea. I was thinking about if the original Real Housewives of New York City, like Luann and Bethany, were satellite friends for the Sex and the City characters, which housewives would be friends with which girl? I'd love to know your thoughts. Love you.
This is also a deceptively hard question, Chelsea, because as we know, Candace Bushnell is friends with many of the housewives, but in the world of Sex and the City, I do feel that really only Samantha would be friends with most of the OG housewives. I'm talking about Luann, Sonia, Dorinda, Ramona.
But Carrie is friends with Susan Sharon.
This is true, who is allegedly based on Dorinda, although we asked Candace and she debunked this.
But still, like, a housewives adjacent person.
Look, I could see Samantha and Ramona fighting over a then single Mario in the late 90s. That would be Ramona's husband. Like, I can't see Miranda being friends with any of these women. And I think most of these women are too garish for Charlotte. But I could see Tinsley Mortimer knowing Carrie on the periphery of the New York party scene. And Bethany Frankel would have definitely wanted to get herself into Carrie's column. So that's my feeling about that. Oh, and Bethany definitely would have tried to have sex with Mr. Big, as well as all of the...
I think all of them would have tried to have sex with Mr. Big, no?
Correct.
He's everyone's type.
Hi, Chelsea and Lauren. Long time, first time. After listening to the latest pod where you talk about Lauren's wedding in the New York Times, I couldn't help but wonder, who is now more famous? Carrie Bradshaw in the fictional universe of Sex and the City or the fabulous ladies of every outfit? Would love your thoughts. Okay, bye.
Okay, obviously Carrie's more famous. Like, if Lauren had a 10-page bridal editorial in Vogue shot by Patrick Demarchelier, then it might be a toss-up. But in the absence of that, I think it's safe to say that Carrie Bradshaw is much more famous, although... this question is really forcing me to interrogate the changing nature of micro celebrity in our culture, right? Because Carrie Bradshaw is a by the book it girl. People would know about her because she would be in the party pages of Details and W and that sort of thing. She would have been New York famous.
I couldn't agree with you more, Chelsea. Look, the collapse of the monoculture is why we have a career, but because of it, our knownness in the larger pop cultural context is diluted. Carrie being known to a larger audience in the late 90s, early 2000s is a lot different than two podcasters with a mid-level podcast in 2024.
Absolutely.
Too long, didn't read. It's Carrie. It will always be Carrie.
It will always be Carrie, but... you know, with And Just Like That, that has caused us to rethink her fame level because it seems like she is no longer famous in New York.
Yes, as demonstrated by the fact that we didn't get to see her on the third hour of the Today Show when promoting her widow memoir.
Yeah, and no one comes up to her on the street anymore. It's like, oh, you're Carrie Bradshaw. Like, that used to happen all the time on Sex and the City.
So basically what you're saying is we're as famous as In Just Like That, Carrie.
Not Sex and the City, Carrie. I think that's accurate.
That brings us to the end of the calls, at least the end of the questions. We do have one more voicemail to play, which doesn't involve a question. It is just a caller doing a pitch perfect impression of the Annabelle Bronstein dialogue.
So we'll leave you with that. Bye, guys.
See you next week.
Oh, which one of you is Annabelle Bronstein? I am. Well, that's impossible. Ms. Bronstein is in London for the week. No, I am Annabelle Bronstein. And she's British. As I was saying, dear sir, I am Annabelle Bronstein. I'm fairly certain you are not Annabelle. I've spoken with her on the phone. I am absolutely Annabelle Bronstein, and I do not pay 900 American dollars annually to be treated like this. Now, ring round the waiter and have him tally up the drinks.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.